Okay, good evening, warm welcome. Let's begin the Haggadah by looking at the question of the Rasha. The Rasha says, Mahavoda Zos Lachem, what is this service to you? Ulefisha Hotzi is Asmam and Aklal, because he included himself from the equation, Kafar Be'ikar, he's denying a core principle of our religion. Two questions. Firstly, the wise child, the Chacham, uses a similar word, Etchem, you, which also excludes himself. What then distinguishes the Chacham from the Rasha? Secondly, even if we do fault the Rasha for excluding himself, does that render him a heretic? Is placing your lot together with the community, as important as it is, one of the foundational principles of the Rambam, which would render its denial an act of heresy? Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein suggests, really, that the key difference between the Chacham and the Rasha is whether Hashem is part of the equation. The Chacham asks about what Maha Edus Vachukav HaMishpatim Asher Tziva Hashem Elokeinu, what Hashem our God has commanded. While the Rasha just says, Maha Voda Zos Lachem, he doesn't mention God. He doesn't have the wisdom to see the hand of Hashem in the Exodus or in life. What about the expression, Hotzi Etz Atzmo? The Haggadah seems to say because he's excluding himself. So the explanation should be understood, the Aruch HaShulchan says, based on the Gemara in Gittin, Daftan Vavamid Beis. The Gemara relates that Titus, the Roman general, when he was coming to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, he slashed the curtain of the Holy of Holies, and he saw blood on the curtain. The blood was really from the Karbanos that had been offered in the previous years. But Titus thought that he had killed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God forbid. And the way the Gemara puts it is, Kesavar Shehareg Et Atzmo, which literally means that he thought he killed himself. Rashi explains that Atzmo himself is a euphemism. It's a Lishna Malia for Hashem. And the Talmud doesn't want to put that into print, this blasphemous thought of Titus. Atzmo, literally himself, is in fact a reference to Hashem. And this new understanding of Atzmo solves the mystery of the Haggadah. The Rasha asks, what is his service to you? Lachem v'lalo. He emphasizes you, which excludes himself. But this is not necessarily worthy of criticism, since the Chacham also excludes himself. The passage therefore continues, Ulefisha Hotzi Etz Atzmo, Kafar Be'ikar. Since the Rasha excludes Atzmo, Atzmo is a reference to Hashem, and so he's rejected a core foundational principle of Judaism. That's why it's Kafar Be'ikar. And this is the difference between the Rasha and the Chacham. And the Haggadah's challenge really to all of us is, do we have the wisdom of the Chacham to see and appreciate the hand of Hashem in our lives, in our freedom, in the miraculous victories of modern day Israel? Or is a person going to be like the Rasha and just to not recognize the hand of Hashem? In Israel's Declaration of Independence, there was a whole debate. Should we make a reference to Hashem? The secular said, no, what does Hashem have to do with it? And the religious, so they said, what do you mean? How could you possibly not recognize the hand of Hashem in the establishment of the State of Israel? So the compromise was made to not refer to Hashem explicitly, but to use the expression Tzur Yisrael, Rock of Israel. So the secular viewed it as the spirit, the strong spirit of Israel, and the religious, right, understood that Tzur Yisrael is a reference, of course, to Hashem. But Rav Yehuda Leib Fishman, one of the signers of the document, see, he was upset that God wasn't explicitly mentioned, and he added before his signature the letters Bet Ayin Zayin He, an acronym standing for the words, of course, Be'ezras Hashem, with the help of Hashem. He figured out a way to include Hashem in the Israeli narrative, and really this responsibility falls upon each one of us as well. And just thinking with the massive attack from Iran this past Saturday night, this is a time also we need to recognize the incredible Yeshua and how Israel was able to repel and counter the attack. We have to see the Yad Hashem and express our tremendous Hakaras HaTov. What's the nature of the matzah? One of the central mitzvahs of the evening, of course, is eating the matzah. We're not supposed to eat matzah leading up to Pesach and the day before Pesach because we're supposed to be enthusiastic and excited about the mitzvah of eating matzah. So there's a halacha, you're not supposed to eat matzah the day prior to Pesach. Some have the custom, it's a custom, to not eat matzah already 2 weeks before Pesach. Some have a custom, I grew up, I didn't eat matzah from after Purim because already you're supposed to start learning the halachas of Pesach in the 30 days leading up to Pesach. So already the 30 days leading up to Pesach, we didn't eat matzah. Okay, some, I'll say jokingly, some have the custom not to eat matzah all year long. But the matzah is something that is supposed to be precious and dear. And we mentioned this in the shir yesterday. So there's a halacha that you're not supposed to eat the matzah the day before Pesach. But what's the nature of the matzah? And again, the matzah it's a mitzvah to eat the matzah at the Seder. Some say that it represents humility. What you see is what you get. It's not fluffed up. There's no hot air. It's not arrogant. So that the matzah is kind of representing humility. The Rambam says that out of all the character traits that a person has, so generally speaking, you're supposed to take the balanced route of moderation. You're supposed to take the middle road. You're supposed to be happy, but not frivolous, not too happy. You're supposed to be generous, but not overly generous. The Rambam is very, very excited about this principle that you're supposed to take the middle road. That doesn't mean to be moderately passionate. As Rabbi Lamb said, no, we're not supposed to be moderately passionate. We're supposed to be passionately moderate. But the Rambam does say that there's two exceptions to that rule. One exception is that a person should never get angry. And the second exception is that a person should be exceedingly humble. That doesn't mean to have low self-esteem, but it means to be confident who you are, but to be humble, right? To be humble about it. And not to think that you're superior to any others. And when you're humble, you give space for others. You give space also for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the matzah represents humility. Okay, so that's one idea. But if you look at the Haggadah, you have conflicting signals about the matzah. And many of you are aware of this. In Halach Ma'anya, we say right off the bat, Halach Ma'anya di Achlavu son of Yarda Mitzrayim, that this is the poor man's bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt. In Egypt. So it sounds like it's a poor man's bread. Now, we know why it's poor man's bread. You go into any of the groceries and you see it's for $40 a pound. So we understand why it's called a poor man's bread, because it makes a person poor. But if you look later in the Haggadah, so when we talk about the Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, so there it says that the Matzah is, of course, to represent this speedy geula. It happened, we weren't even able to let our dough rise. And we went out so quickly. You know, the holiday is called Chag HaMatzot. Chag HaMatzot. Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditchev suggests that the reason why we call it Pesach, and the Torah tends to call it Chag HaMatzot, is because we salute Hashem and Hashem salutes us. We salute Hashem that Hashem passed over Bnei Yisrael, so we thank Hashem. That's why we call it Pesach. And Hashem thanks us, or salutes us, that we had the faith to rush out of Mitzrayim without fully packing our bags, without letting the dough rise. So that's why the Torah calls it Chag HaMatzot, to give us a compliment, and we call it Chag HaPesach, to give Hashem, Hakar Sitov, to give Hashem a compliment. But, so you have conflicting signals in the Haggadah as to what is matzah. Is matzah a food of slavery or a food of redemption? On the one hand, at the beginning of the Maggid, it says, Halach Ma'anya, this is the poor man's bread that our ancestors ate in Egypt. And then on the other hand, it says, towards the end, when it talks about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, so there, it says that Matzah is because of the fast Geula. So perhaps we could explain this based on another element relating to the establishment of the State of Israel. We're thinking about Israel and praying for the return of the hostages and all the soldiers in uniform and for Achenu B'nai Israel. So thinking about Israel. So after the Hakamat Medina, so there was a discussion, what should the emblem be of Israel? And what was the decision? The decision was that the emblem of Israel should be what? Right, the menorah. It was a menorah, and you have the olive branches on the side, and you have which word underneath? Yisrael. I think if you go to the Knesset, there's a big emblem of Israel with that menorah. Rav Herzog, who was the chief rabbi at the time, and so Rav Herzog was very upset that menorah was chosen for the emblem of Israel. Because that menorah, the menorah of course is the menorah, right? The menorah of the Beis HaMikdash. But that menorah was strikingly similar to the menorah that was on the Arch of Titus. Second reference to Titus. That was on the menorah of the Arch, that was on the Arch of Titus. If you go, the Arch of Titus is in the Roman Forum, right near the Roman Forum in the center of Rome, and the Arch of Titus, of course, has the taking away of the Jewish captives with the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash. And there's a whole question, there's really a separate shiur, as to the menorah, because the menorah on the Arch of Titus, it doesn't seem to be the way the menorah necessarily looked from other drawings that we have. Like Rashi and the Rambam say that the menorah had three legs. That the menorah on the Arch of Titus, if you remember it, it has like a double base. So scholars have different explanations that maybe there was a base that was added by either Titus or by Herod, or perhaps this was a different menorah that he took out of Jerusalem and brought back to Rome. Different explanations. Why am I sharing that? Because it's not like a slam dunk that was the menorah. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. In terms of it, did it exactly look like that? There's a question. So Rav Herzog said, why choose that menorah that represents exile, that represents destruction, that represents the Romans destroying the Beit HaMikdash? Why choose that menorah to be the emblem of the State of Israel? And Gershom Scholem, a philosopher, Kabbalist, wrote about Kabbalah. So he gave the counter argument. He said, no, it's the perfect symbol. Because this menorah represents exile. And now we're reestablishing, right, the State of Israel. And the Jews are coming back to the land. And we're fulfilling the prophecies of 2,000 years. That what better symbol than to take this menorah that represents exile and to kind of figuratively, perhaps literally on some level, to bring it back to Israel. The menorah that was exiled, the Jewish people that were exiled, are coming back.
A little bit like the matzah represents.
Very good, Steve. Exactly. So maybe that's the idea of the matzah.
Captivity.
Does matzah represent captivity, or does it represent freedom? So the answer is yes. Both. And we have sources that say that the Mitzrim fed the Jewish people matzah because it was a cheap food. And it takes it's not so luxurious, it's very easy to make, it's kind of easy to make, it's quick, and it takes a long time to digest, as maybe some of us know, we don't want the TMI. But anyway, those are some reasons that are actually given as to why the Mitzrim fed the Jewish people matzah. It was cheap, it was easy, and and what happened with the Geula is that Hashem took that symbol and he flipped it to be the symbol of their success. That food that represented hardship and persecution and oppression for so long, so that became the symbol of the redemption. Because when Bnei Israel left, they wanted to bake bread. Now we're suddenly free. Now we can have a gashmaka meal. Now we can have challah. But they rushed out so quickly that they weren't able to let the dough rise. And so they had to have matzah again, but now the matzah was transformed into a symbol of redemption. And it's just like the menorah, because I used the menorah as was a symbol of exile, and now it becomes a symbol of the geula. So too, the matzah was a symbol, it's both. It's halach ma'adi lach ravasam ba'arat Mitzrayim, but then it was flipped around to be the symbol of our redemption. And I think the powerful lesson for us from the matzah is that Hashem could bring redemption in an instant. He could take something, and it could be a crisis, and it could be flipped around. And for us to have the hope, for us to have the belief in Hashem, and also in ourselves, that we could turn a situation around with the help of Hashem. The expression in the prayer in the tefillah of Shachris is Hashem is mashpil geim umadbiya shfalim. Hashem lowers the haughty and umadbiya shfalim, and he raises the downtrodden. That expression has always resonated with me. That when don't get too high, because God for Hashem will lower. But for those who are humble, for those who are downtrodden, Hashem will help you get raised up. And so when we have successes, to always remain humble and never take anything for granted. Because if we become too lax and start taking things for granted and get maybe arrogant. Okay, so that's not good, because then Hashem is mashbil geim, but he's magbia shefalim, and that's a lesson of the matzah. Yes, Rifki and then Adina.
I have a question. My question is, with the Rosha, it says you have But the Rasha's not saying that. The Haggadah is saying
that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so...
The Fisha Hosi is Asman HaKlal, because he took either him... The simple explanation is because he took himself.
Right. However, that's the explanation of the Haggadah, or the Baal Haggadah, whatever you call him. But actually what he said is, Maha Avodah Hazoh Lachem. Lachem V'lo'o. But he only said the first line, Maha Avodah Hazoh Lachem. And the Chacham says, Maha Ha'edutva Chukim Ha'mishpatim Hashem Tzva Hashem Elokeinu Etzel. Yeah, Hashem's name is there.
So here's how you have to read it, Rivki. Right. Ma'avodozos Lachem. What is the service to you?
Yeah, he doesn't have.
So we're not happy about that, because Lachem Velo Lo, Lachem Velo Lo. He's saying, it's for you, Rivki, but not for me. But you know what? But wait a second. That's the Chacham also did that. The Chacham also did that. So Lefi Shehotzi, that's the explanation of why it's different than the Chacham. Yeah.
Is this on a certain level the same that you were doing before, Rivki? Just that the English Shabbat. Like, yeah. Things that are down and make them
beautiful.
So the same thing with all of those. From
Gnut to Shevach.
Yeah.
I'm so happy you mentioned that, because I'm about to get into that now. That's my next thing. I'm so happy you mentioned that. Great. Did it ever bother you, or did it ever intrigue you, that you have like the four questions of the Manish Tana and then the four children? Like another four questions. Now, we often say that four is kind of it's a number that's kind of ubiquitous. It pops up over and over again. You have four cups, and you have four questions of Manish Tana, and the four children, and there's four psukim that are expounded upon.
Four mothers,
very, very good. Four mothers, very good. And so what is there any relationship between the four questions of the Manish Tana and the four children? So I think one explanation that's given is that actually... That the Chacham asked the question relating to the matzah, because he asked about the central mitzvah of the evening. The Rasha asked the question about the maror. The second question of Manish Tana is the maror, because he looks around the world and he always sees the negative. Then the Tam is the simple child. He notices the dippings. He's a visual learner. And that's the third question of Manish Tana. He notices the dippings because he's a visual learner.
Oh, yes.
And the Sheinu De'Alishol, he doesn't know, even doesn't know how to ask, so he doesn't even ask about the Seder table itself. He doesn't ask about the Seder. He just notices the people sitting around the table that they're reclining. He doesn't even know enough to ask anything about the Seder table itself. So that's one idea in terms of relating the four questions of Manish Tana to the four children. But I wanted to suggest another idea. And this occurred to me, and I think there could be logic here, that there's a debate in the Gemara about a principle. But there's one thing that we do at the Seder that Adina just made reference to, is that we go from the bad to the good. Matchil b'gnut u'misayim b'shevach. That's part of the idea of relating the story, is that we go from the negative to the positive. We try to share the whole journey, because you can't appreciate the blessings without thinking about where you came from. So there's a debate between Rav and Shmuel, between two major, major sages in the Gemara, as to how to accomplish that at the Seder. Rav says you go from Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayavutenu, that our ancestors were idolaters, all the way back. Maybe a little bit in Mitzrayim. Maybe it's talking about Avram, who at the beginning of his life was an idolater. But now that we were taken out of Mitzrayim, Achshav Kervanu Hamakam Lavadoso. Now Hashem has brought us closer to serving Him. That's one explanation. The second explanation of Shmuel is that how do you go from the suffering to the redemption, that it's Avadam Hayinu Leparav Mitzrayim, and then Hashem took us out of slavery, took us out of Mitzrayim. Which opinion do we follow? Again, yes. Because we actually incorporate both answers into the Haggadah. So if you have this Haggadah that I'm using, that I handed out a number of them, It's right after the Manashana, but if you're following it on your own, you kind of know your way around the Haggadah. So after the Manashana, it says over here, the answer. I think it was Allen Iverson, who was a basketball player known as the answer. Anyway, so the answer. So you have the four questions of Manashana, and you have the answer. Avadam Hayinu, we were slaves, we were taken out of slavery. That's following the position of Shmuel. That's following the position of Shmuel. And then you have a little bit later in the Haggadah. Excuse me. By the four children. What does it say after the four children? Yeah. So after the four children. Where is that? So then it says, Yochel Merosh Chodesh. You might have thought that the story happens, that the story of Sifri Yetzias Mitzrayim can be fulfilled already from Rosh Chodesh. No, it's only by Yom Ahu. If it says by Yom Ahu, you might have thought it could be done earlier in the day. No, it's only when you have matzah and moror munach lefanecha. Why? Because you want to transmit a message, you got to model it. You have to model it. You have to eat the matzah. You have to eat the moror. It can't be about preaching. That's just parenthetical. But then right after the four children, it says, Mithila Obdeo Kochavim Hayu Avotenim. So that's the second answer. First we're idolaters. Long, long ago, our forefathers were worshippers of idols. And then we were brought closer to serve Hashem. We therefore incorporate both answers into the framework of the Haggadah. The Haggadah is relating the story of let's say persecution or oppression to liberation. What's clearly the debate between Rav and Shmuel? One opinion is focusing on the physical, right, which is going from slavery to being freed from slavery. That's the answer that we give and focus on right after the Manishtana. And one answer of Rav is clearly focusing on the spiritual, on the intellectual, on the internal. And that's where that we were distant from God, worshippers of idols even, and we were brought closer to Hashem. We incorporate both answers into the framework of the Haggadah, really the first half of the Maggid section, before we start learning about the four psukim and expounding upon those four psukim. Why is the first answer of Adam Ayinu after the Manashana and Mitchilov de Kochavim is after the four children? Why? Because the first part of the Haggadah is focusing on what happened externally to the Jewish people. They were slaves and they were redeemed from slavery. That's focusing on kind of like, you know, on the ground. Externally what happened, physically, practically what happened, the Jewish people were in servitude in Mitzrayim and they were taken out of Mitzrayim. When it comes to the physical realm, all the Jews who left Mitzrayim experienced it in the same way. Yes, there were some Jews who didn't get out according to tradition. But those Jews who made it out, they physically left Egypt and they had kind of a similar physical experience of leaving Mitzrayim. So the first part of the Seder is focusing on the physical external dimension of what occurred to Bnei Yisrael. That's why the answer that's given and going from bad to good is Avadam Hayinu V'yotzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham, because that happened to all the Jewish people who left Mitzrayim. In this realm, everyone has the same questions. In other words, everyone, and those are the four questions of the Manashtana. Yeah, you have the kids who sing it, but really everyone is asking the same four questions. It doesn't say that one kid has one question, another kid has another question. It's All the kids and all the adults have the same questions. Why? Because we all eat matzah. We all eat moro. We all dip two times. We all do haseba. You know what I'm saying? That's the first half of the Haggadah. Then, in the second phase of the Haggadah, we go a little deeper. That this is not just a story about physical redemption. But rather there was a spiritual transformation that occurred to both the individuals and the nation of Israel. And that it's not just a freedom from slavery, but it's freedom too. It's freedom to live our best selves and to connect to Hashem. And now it's in the spiritual realm. Once we're in the spiritual realm, it's intellectual, spiritual, religious, internal, and now every single person, it's not like everyone is affected in the same way. It's not monolithic. Every single person, even in Yetzias Mitzrayim, and certainly in 2024, around the Seder table, every single person is different. You have your grand plan to have the beautiful Seder, but then you're a couple minutes in, half the people in the Seder want to get through it to get to the meal, half the people want to like really appreciate the evening, and you got everyone in between, and then it's not as easy. Here you have this plan, grand plan for the Seder, so every single person is different. And that's when you have the Chacham asks his question, and the Rasha asks his question, and the Tam asks her question, and the Shehendeh Lashaleh asks his question. Because every single person has a different question, has a different hang-up, has a different personality. And therefore, and experiences redemption then, and Pesach today, very differently. So that's my suggestion in terms of, a little bit explains the framework of the Maggid. Your Matchil B'Gnutu Messiah B'Shevach. How do you accomplish that? You have two different opinions. We incorporate both. One is physical, the second is spiritual. And that's why you have the questions are presented differently. Because the first one, everyone asks the same questions, and it's more kind of externally based. It's the matzah, it's the maror, you know, it's the things that we all do. But the four questions of the Chacham and Rasha, this is already like kind of like peeling away the layer to try to get underneath what's going on. And here every person has a different experience. And I think this is the notion at the Seder, but always, that Bnei Yisrael have unity, but with diversity. And that, that yes, that we all have the same beliefs and history and destiny and mitzvos, but every single person can live in their own way, can blaze their own path, can make their own difference in the community, can choose their own mitzvah. Of course, we keep all the mitzvahs. But the Rambam says on the Mishnah, we've learned this together, that it says that Rabbi Chananya ben Akasha Omer, right, that Rabbi Chananya said that Hashem wanted to bring merits to the people of Israel, and therefore he gave them a lot of mitzvot. Right, the rabbi, this is very, very heartwarming words in the Jewish tradition, because it means the rabbi has finished his Bar Torah to Mincha Marv. He says, Rabbi Chananya ben Akasha Omer. But the Rambam asks, why is that a privilege? God wanted to give a privilege to the people of Israel, and so he gave us many mitzvot. Now, so you guys are very religious. You're all very religious. You love mitzvot. Of course, a Jew loves mitzvot. And we do. But the Rambam asks, he says, it's almost like such a high bar to achieve. You have all these mitzvot. How can you possibly observe them all? So the answer is that you have to still make an effort. You have to still make an effort to keep the mitzvot as best as you can. And all of you are doing a great job. We're all trying to grow in Torah and mitzvot. But the Rambam has a principle. He says, if you want to gain Olam Haba, and there's a lot to unpack here, but we're not going to get so much into it. But he says, if you want to gain Olam Haba, then you have to do one mitzvah perfectly. For your neshama to like reach perfection, you got to do the mitzvah exactly, fully, with passion, full engagement. That's what the Rambam says. And so he says, therefore, it's really up to every single Jew, based on your talents, based on your personality, based on your resources, say, okay, what do I want to really go full throttle in that mitzvah? Could be chesed, could be Israel, it could be community, getting around the community, it could be Shabbos, or, you know, this. And that could relate to your particular mission and purpose in life, which is that, you know, maybe this is what you're supposed to do, and this is what the way you're supposed to get involved. And of course, there's certain common elements that we're all supposed to observe, and we all keep the mitzvot. But that's how the Rambam says, that's why God gave us a privilege to give us so many mitzvot, because this way every single person could choose their way and their mitzvah of really, really making a difference. So what you see from here is that there's achdus, but not with uniformity. That you can do chesed in Elizabeth in your way, and you could do chesed in the way you want to do it, and you could do chesed in the way you want to do it. And you could maybe choose to really get involved in the community in this way, and you could get involved in a different way. And you might choose one mitzvah, you might choose a different mitzvah, as the Rambam says. And so that's maybe the idea of the Haggadah, is the Haggadah recognizes the achdus, that we're in this together, and we came out of Mitzrayim together, and we have the same questions. But then really, when you peel it down a layer, you see that everyone actually has a different question, a different personality, and a different role in the community. I've given the mashal in the past about the baseball field. For those who are sports fans, that in the football, every single football field in the National Football League is the same. Every single basketball court is the same. But with baseball, if you're a baseball, I'm a big baseball fan, proud Yankee fan, Dodger fan too. But baseball is different, that the infield is the same in every stadium. 90 feet between the bases, of course. 60 feet, 6 inches between the pitcher's mound and home plate. The inner part is the same in every field, but the outer part has different dimensions. It's just the way it is. Every stadium and every team, they have a range. You can't just do whatever you want. You can't make it like 500 feet. But there's a certain range, and the fence could be a certain any height you want. So in Fenway Park in Boston, it has a very, very high green. It's called the Green Monster. Yankee Stadium, it's a short right field porch, you know, because they had lefties and they wanted to make it easy to hit a home run. So I see this as a metaphor for Judaism, that the infield represents those things that we share in common. And that's why in every stadium, it's the same dimensions. That's the mitzvot. That's our beliefs. That's our history, our destiny. Those are things we share in common. Pesach. We're all keeping Pesach. But then you have the outfield represents every single Jew is an individual, can make a difference in her or his own way, based on your resources, talents, and ability. There's also autonomy. There's individuality and autonomy within Judaism. I think that's an important message in the Haggadah, and it's an important message of Judaism. Now, Elizabeth, you had a question?
I just had a quick question. I was reading that if you make Aliyah, you fulfill all of the mitzvot.
If you make Aliyah, you fulfill all the mitzvot. I don't. That's a whole other discussion. The Gemara has a comment that when you live in Israel, you have a different relation with Hashem. It's like a strong relation with Hashem when you're in Israel. And we have some commentaries that talk about that. There is, I think it's either the Ramban that might say that the observance of the mitzvot in Chutzar, it might be Rashi also, that you're observing the mitzvot in Chutzar is like practice. For when you make it to Eretz Yisrael, that's when you really observe the mitzvah. That's a very striking comment. Now,
I would just on that, can I just say that I think you have the ability to fulfill all the mitzvahs. There are certain mitzvahs you cannot do chutzlaretz.
Right.
You can only do in Israel. So if you're
correct,
there, you have the opportunity to fulfill all the mitzvahs, which you wouldn't if you were here.
Okay, very, very, okay, good, good. Now we drink four cups at the Seder.
Yes.
And we know that for many elements of the Seder we recline. We recline as an expression of freedom or royalty. Rav Soloveitchik understood it as an act of defiance against Paro and any dictatorial regimes that want to oppress the Jewish people. So we're gonna recline because we're gonna do what we want. Now the Gemara presents an interesting debate as to when you do Heseva for the four cups. One opinion says that you recline for the first two cups of wine, but not the last two cups of wine. The other opinion says, no, you recline only the last two cups, but not the first two cups. So really, both opinions say you should just recline for two cups, but because there's a question as to which ones, So that's why we're stringent and we just recline for all four. Ah, when it's a rabbinic law, you should be lenient. Nah, because then you wouldn't recline at all. And then number two, it's easy to recline, so just recline for all of them. Now, what's the reason for each opinion? So the first opinion says you just recline for the first two and not the last two. Why? Because the first two is when you're leaving Egypt. So once you're out of Egypt, my dahava hava, what happened, happened. That's the expression of the Gemara. My dahava hava, what happened, happened. So you don't need to recline for the last two because you're already out. And the other opinion says that you only recline for the last two because that's when you're completely free. And so now you could recline as an expression of that freedom. But in the first two, akati avadim hayinu, we're still slaves during the first two. And that's why you don't recline in the first two. Number one is, you see from here, is that part of the idea of the Seder is not just to recount the story, but we're actually, right, we're it's experiential. We're reenacting the experience. We're trying to go through it ourselves. But number two, what do we conclude? We conclude we reject both opinions. We reject both, because we recline for all four. Why? Because so we reject the idea of my dahava hava, right? The first opinion says only the first two, but not the last two, because you're already out already. So what do you... A Jew never says what happened, happened. Well, unless you got into a fight with somebody and you're trying to get past it, okay. But what it means, my dahava hava in a certain sense is that doesn't relate to me anymore, that doesn't impact me anymore. A Jew is not supposed to say my dahava hava. And the second, and also we reject the notion that that you only celebrate if you're completely liberated, or we'll only separate if we're completely successful. No, even right. The other opinion says no. Only for the last two are you fully freed, but for the first two, we're still inching out of the slavery. We believe that even though we may not be at complete redemption, it's still worthy, we can still recline and appreciate the progress. And that's also a message about the Medinat Yisrael, Reishis Michat Gulatenu. We have much more way to go, but we recline for the first steps too. We celebrate and express our karzto for the first steps and for the first cups. So maybe that's why we recline for all four, right? Because we don't say might, we reject both ideas. Right, each opinion said, no, you don't do it for the other two because of by the hava hava, because what happened, happened. A Jew never says what happened in the past just happened. And it doesn't relate to me. No, it still relates to me.
Are women obligated to lean?
Are women obligated to lean? Yes, a woman should lean, yes. Yes, a woman should lean. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think there's an opinion in Rishonim that says that a woman who's an Isha Chashuva, a woman who's a distinguished woman, then she could lean. And another opinion is that all women are Chashuva.
Absolutely.
All women are Chashuva. So what's the question? Women have come a long way. Now, okay. I'm trying to think about what to skip and what to okay. Two more ideas. I'm happy if you have any questions.
Well,
or
thought,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
The interesting. But wondering what divides it is Baruch HaMakom.
Oh, beautiful. Very good. Baruch HaMakom. Very nice. Okay. So since you're saying that, Baruch HaMakom. She said that what divides the two is Baruch HaMakom, that blessed is Hashem. I guess you're saying that it revolves around Hashem.
What?
That it revolves around Hashem.
What divided the first part in terms of the physical to the spiritual?
Is Baruch HaMakom.
Yeah. And so it's all of a sudden, okay, this all happened, then remember God. Right?
Ah, very, very good. Remember God. Okay.
And bless God.
Great. So that's one of the themes that I wanted to kind of highlight in this shiur is the presence of Hashem in the Seder. The Rasha rejects the presence of Hashem, as opposed to the Chacham. The Matzah, right? That's the power of Hashem. Hashem has the capacity to take something that's down and make it up, and to turn things around. and bring the menorah back to Eretz Yisrael. And that a lot about the Seder is not just physically leaving Mitzrayim, but is spiritually connecting to Hashem. So, I'll tell you a story about Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditcher when he was walking back from shul, and he overheard somebody saying, he was like through the window, and he said, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha, Echad. Have I told you this story? So one idea of Echad is that every single child is Echad, is special, is important, is Echad. But the Rabbi Levi Yitzchak and his students were very, very intrigued about this Jew who was saying Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha. So they you know, knocked on the door and they were peeked through the window and they said, what are you doing? So he said, because the rabbi in shul said that when you say the word Echad, you have to enunciate the Dalet very clearly. The rabbi was talking about Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And this Jew in Berditchev totally misunderstood the rabbi. So the students were laughing at him. And Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditchev, the great defender of Israel, who always saw the positive of the Jewish people, who when he saw a Jew fixing his wagon with his tefillin on, when the other person would say, how can he be fixing his wagon while wearing tefillin? Rabbi Levi Yitzchak said, no. Even when he's fixing his wagon, he's wearing tefillin. It's the other way around. And this is what I told somebody on Rosh Hashanah. He was upset that there was somebody in the row behind him who was just talking the whole time. How upsetting that is, how frustrating it is. And he was upset about it, and he should be upset about it. But I told him, maybe there's another way to look at it. Even though this person, yeah, why is he talking the whole time? But on the other hand, this person is clearly so disconnected. He doesn't know, and yet he's in shul. And yet he's in shul, yet he's here at Beth Jacob. So Rav Levi Yitzchak Berditchev said that you're, yes, he misunderstood the rabbi, but this Jew, this simple Jew, he understood the whole project of the Seder. Because the key goal of the Seder evening is recognizing that Hashem Echad. That Hashem is running the show, Hashem is in control, and Hashem took B'nai Yisrael out of Mitzrayim then, and he could take B'nai Yisrael out of our challenges, and he will, Mirtz Hashem, take B'nai Yisrael out of our challenges and protects us now and in the future. And so that's why he got to he already realized the goal of the Seder right by the four children. The Rambam, I'll leave you with one last idea and then maybe a story. One paragraph in the Haggadah talks about Zechirat Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's one of our Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, right? Where he says that I'm like 70 years old. And I didn't realize that there's an obligation to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim also at night. Until Ben Zoma taught us that it's based on the pasuk Leman Tizkor Yom Tzias Mitzrayim Kol Yemechayecha. You see that there? Yemechayecha Hayamim Kol Yemechayecha Halelot. Do you remember that part of the? It's a very well known part of the Seder towards the beginning. You have to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim all the days of your life. Yemei Chayecha teaches us days. Kol teaches us even night. And Chachamim disagree and say Yemei Chayecha Olam Hazeh are the days of, like, you know, in the era that we're living in. Kol is coming to include Yemot HaMashiach. Fine. So this paragraph happens to be talking about something that doesn't really relate to Pesach. Why? Because this paragraph is talking about remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim every day of the year. Well, of course, that relates to Pesach, because that's what we celebrate, and we talk about it, and we elaborate on it, we go from negative to positive. But really, it's an obligation that applies every single day. And according to Ben Zoma, it's every single day and night. So how is Sipur at the Seder different than Zechira? How is relating the story different than remembering it every single day? Right? So there's a number of differences. One difference is that at the Seder we do it through questions and answers. Another difference is that we go from the negative to the positive, as we discussed, matchol de gnut of Messiah and b'shevach.
and
the experiential.
And there's other differences as well, but I don't want to say them all yet, okay? The Rambam, interestingly, okay, doesn't count Zechira Yetzias Mitzrayim as one of the 613 mitzvahs. It's an anomaly, it's a strange thing, because the Pasuk says, Laman Tizkor Es Yom Teisa Mitzrayim Kol Yemei Chayecha. The Rambam, for whatever reason, doesn't count it on his official list of Taryag mitzvos. Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik gives two answers. His first explanation is that it must be that it is a mitzvah, but that it's subsumed under a different mitzvah, namely Kriyat Shema. We generally fulfill the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim with the last pasuk of the Shema. Yetziat Mitzrayim connects to the Shema because Shema is accepting upon ourselves that Hashem runs the show. Hashem is in charge. That's what Kriya Shema is all about. And so Yetziat Mitzrayim, of course, is part and parcel of that Hashem saved Bnei Israel and can bring miracles to protect and save us. So Rav Chaim says that Yetziat Mitzrayim is a mitzvah, but it's kind of counted by the Rambam as part of Kriya Shema. The second answer of Rav Chaim is a little trickier, but let's see if we can go for it, and let me see if I can crunch it down. But it's leads to a very, very powerful idea, which is that will the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim on a daily basis apply b'mot HaMashiach? That's a debate. That's in the Haggadah, right? Ben Zoma, Chachamim say yes, that the mitzvah will still apply b'mot HaMashiach. Ben Zoma apparently disagrees and says that no, that Kol is not coming to add Yemos HaMashiach, it's coming to add the nights. Okay? The Gemara says clearly that Ben Zoma is taking a stand here. And he's saying that the mitzvah of remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim will not apply b'mos HaMashiach. Why? Because the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu says that there's going to come a time where you're going to praise Hashem not for Yetzias Mitzrayim, but you're going to praise Hashem for the miracles of Yemot HaMashiach, for the ingathering of the exiles from Ethiopia, from the former Soviet Union, even from the United States, for the flourishing of agriculture and the wines, and the flourishing of yeshivot, and Mirtz Hashem, the building of the Beis HaMikdash and the coming of Mashiach, and as we continue to go along this beautiful process that I believe we're really in today. But the Psukim say that there's going to come a time in Yirmiyahu that you're going to praise Hashem for the Messianic miracles. You're not going to praise Hashem for Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's still going to be a crucial part of our history, no doubt, that we were formed as a people. No question about it. But the way the Gemara puts it is that if you're saved by a wolf, then you're saved by a bear. Then a year later, you're saved by a lion. So what are you going to talk about at Thanksgiving? Right? You're going to talk about you were just saved from a lion. Yeah, I was once saved from a bear, once saved from a wolf. But I was just saved from a lion, by a lion. So the Gemara kind of gives both those explanations of Ben Zoma, which is that the mitzvah of Zechirat Yetzias Mitzrayim won't apply b'mot HaMashiach. Why? Because the miracles of the Messianic era are going to be greater, are going to overshadow the Exodus. And number two, they're going to be the more recent. They're going to be the more recent miracles, so you're going to focus on them. And Rifki will get your thought in a second. And Chachamim disagree that what? You're right, that the miracles of the Messianic era are going to overshadow, but there's still going to be a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, B'mot HaMashiach. We follow Ben Zoma. And we remember Yetzias Mitzrayim in the morning and remember it at night. And the consensus seems to be that this mitzvah is not going to apply B'mot HaMashiach. The Rambam says clearly when he counts the mitzvahs, is one of his principles. He says, I only count mitzvahs on the official list if it applies even B'mot HaMashiach. To remember Yetzias Mitzrayim is a mitzvah now. It's a full-fledged mitzvah. But it's not going to be counted on the official 613 list if it doesn't apply b'mot Mashiach. And there's a handful of, there's some of those. So this is, that's where Reb Chaim's explanation is. So why does the Rambam not count remembering Yetzias Mitzrayim as a mitzvah? One is because it's included in the Kriya Shema. Second answer is because the mitzvah won't apply b'mot Mashiach. Here you go. You ready? But when it comes to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, relating the story at the Seder, the Rambam does count this as a mitzvah. The pasuk of relating the story on the Pesach night, on the 15th of Nisan, and we do it in the last part on the 16th, that's based on which pasuk? V'igada to Labincha Bayomahu. So there the Rambam does count it as a mitzvah. So whatever, fireworks, whatever fancy schmancy explanation you're going to give as to why the Rambam doesn't count remembering the Exodus every single day as a mitzvah, but now suddenly he's counting Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim as a mitzvah. That question was asked by Rav Hutter in his Pachad Yitzchak, and he gives an amazing answer. What's the answer? Zechira Yetzias Mitzrayim that we do every day is what? It's remembering the past. It's remembering an event that took place 3,300 years ago and how it continues to shape our lives and what it means to us. But it's talking about an event in the past. Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim at the Seder, it's recreating and reenacting the event in the present. It's as if we're going through the experience ourselves. And that's why there's a question. The first two cups, the last two cups, are we still in slavery? Are we redeemed? That's how Sipur is. That's another way that Sipur is different than Zechira. So if Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, Michelle, is that we're reenacting the experience on Pesach night, that's the project of the Seder. That's the challenge of the Seder. If that's the case, even B'mot HaMashiach, when it hits the 15th of Nisan, tonight at the Pesach Seder, when you're sharing with the Pesach Seder with whoever you're enjoying the Pesach Seder with, should share this idea. This is the current miracle. That we're going through the miracle today. And so, right, even B'mot HaMashiach, the mitzvah is going to apply. Why? Because we said that we're not going to have to remember a past event because we're going to focus on the more recent miracles. But on Pesach night, this is the most recent miracle. What we're going through individually, personally, by going through Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's why the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is going to apply B'mot HaMashiach, and that's why the Rambam counts it on his official list of 613 mitzvot. And I think that's what we're supposed to try to do at the Seder, and I once read this, I don't remember from where, but I think Sivan Rachav Meir quotes it in her book about the Parsha, that the whole mission of a Jew is to take herself or himself out of Mitzrayim. In life, Yetzias Mitzrayim. And what's Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim is a country, but Mitzrayim is also Meitzarim, and a Meitzar Karasika. Meitzar is a boundary. It's a border. And so maybe it also represents the limitations and the boundaries that we often place upon ourselves. And so Yetzias Mitzrayim is to take ourselves out of Mitzrayim, and to help others leave their Mitzrayim. So it means to help alleviate any suffering they're going through, but also help others maybe achieve their goals and maybe exceed their expectations, to give them that encouragement, and for us ourselves also to recognize that we could often exceed the expectations that we have of ourselves. We could break out of Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush says, "Lo ish dvarim anochi," right? I'm not a man of words. And then look what he becomes. He becomes Eila HaDvarim Asher Divar Moshe. He becomes an incredible orator who, right, of course, accomplishes what he accomplishes. And so that's the ultimate goal of the night. Recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way he's running the world, and the fact of, and also what we're supposed to be doing in the evening, I think a lot is to recreate the experience on the physical level, spiritual level, and leaving any oppressions or persecutions or crisis, Hashem should help us
get through this difficult time for Am Yisrael today, but also on a very personal level in terms of the limitations, the shackles that we sometimes that we're weighed down by in Mirtz Hashem this holiday, on an individual level, collective level, Am Yisrael, all of us, we should have really truly a Yitzia Mitzrayim, a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. Thank you.